Today on the 21st Show, we're remembering former Illinois Governor George Ryan, who died Friday at the age of 91. He was a pharmacist before going into politics. Then he went from Kankakee County Board to the Illinois House of Representatives, where he eventually became Speaker, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, and finally, Governor. He leaves a complicated legacy, spending 6 years in prison after a federal corruption conviction, but he also won acclaim among human rights activists for emptying Illinois' death row. We'll talk about that and more with people who covered Governor Ryan and those who worked with him. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Late last week, on Friday afternoon, word came that former Illinois Governor George Ryan had died. He was 91 years old. A pharmacist by training, his career in public service took him from state representative to Speaker of the Illinois House to Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, and ultimately, Governor. Then, of course, came the prosecution for corruption and more than 6 years in federal prison. Along the way, he challenged the way the death penalty was administered in Illinois, emptied our death row, and set Illinois on a path that would, 8 years later, lead us to abolish capital punishment here. His legacy is, to say the least, a complicated one. And yet, years after he left office, even after he was in prison, I would run into people in and around Illinois government who had fond memories of his time in office. That's in large part because the way he thought of himself was as a pragmatic politician, not an ideologue.
My basic instinct is to be open to everyone, to listen, to learn, and to help where I can. Compromise is not a bad word. Government can't operate under the watchword of change for change's sake. That makes no sense. Nor can government operate by holding back the hands of time and the call for progress. That makes no sense either.
Well, today we are considering the life of George Ryan for the hour. Joining me to talk about that first are three reporters who have covered him throughout his time in politics. Rick Pearson is chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Brian.
Also with us, Dave McKinney, political reporter at WBEZ. During the Ryan administration, he was State House Bureau Chief at the Chicago Sun-Times. Dave, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Good morning.
And finally, also with us, Bernie Schoenberg, a former political columnist at the State Journal Register. He's now retired. But Bernie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Nice to be with you again, like when we used to work together.
All right, Rick, I'm going to start with you. You covered Ryan and his rise to power throughout his time afterwards as well. How would you describe his path through Illinois politics?
I would say it was an evolution. An ideological evolution. Growing up in Kankakee and where he was as the town pharmacist and the back room of the pharmacy in Kankakee, which is where all the political meetings were held that basically led him to the Kankakee County Board. It was the old days of politics. Ed McBroom was the local state senator and GOP kingmaker. And if you wanted a state job at a state facility there, you had to go through McBroom, and he would make you buy a car from his car dealership, or if you got a raise or if you got hired. That's the kind of politics that George grew up with. And you saw this kind of evolution of in ideology that occurred over the years. In 1982, where he single-handedly killed the Equal Rights Amendment from passing, and Jim Thompson made him his running mate because Thompson needed a strong conservative to join the ticket. And you go from that, anti-abortion, you go from that to actually him signing a bill that would have banned taxpayer money for Medicaid abortions, the death penalty. All of this very evolutionary in ideology, but so much of the politics, I think that part of the problem that he ran into was he didn't change in the in the political nature of the game.
Bernie Schoenberg, you covered him. The Springfield Press Corps had a sometimes prickly relationship with at least Governor Ryan. What stands out to you from those experiences?
It was also his just unfortunate change over time. What happened to him with the corruption, I know he blamed, or others blamed, on having bad people around him. You know, he was always gruff. He was known as a conservative. He did compromise. He was a good legislator, but he, you know, was in that kind of political game that Rick was talking about, where, you know, you help your friends, you hurt your enemies. You know, he had a chief of staff named Scott Fawell, who was running the operation. When he was Secretary of State, he had these offices all over the state where they were raising money for him, and it turned out doing so illegally. And when there were some very courageous people taking notes on what bribes were being paid and were trying to go to officials to get that taken care of, you know, his inspector general, who was an old friend from Kankakee County, Dean Bauer, buried those investigations. So I have really mixed emotions about him. I saw George Ryan a couple of times in Chicago after his release from prison, very amiable meetings. So I find him, he had that gruff nature, the inner charm, but he let the horrible politics get away from him. And every time he ran into a family member of mine, it was kind of the same joke. He ran into my son when he was 35, not when he was about 12 in Springfield, said, "What do you want to be when you grow up? I hope it's not a reporter like your dad." And meeting my wife and my father-in-law on two different occasions, he said they were sorry they were related to me. But it was funny, it was charming, but toward the end of his term as governor, he basically didn't answer questions from some reporters if they got on the bad subject of corruption, which obviously sunk him politically and personally for, you know, his 6 years in prison.
Dave McKinney, I'm trying to picture in my mind's eye, and maybe this is somewhere online, I was not able to locate it, but a front page on the Sun-Times that said Governor Grumpy, and it was this really close-in photo of him looking quite angry. Can you speak to that?
Well, yeah, I think that was something that kind of came together near the end of his term when, you know, the bottom was just dropping out for him politically, as Bernie talked about. And I think he had made some sort of public comment, maybe around the state fair time, where he said he hated parades. And it just was sort of like the capper on all of this. It's like, you know, who doesn't like a good parade, you know? And that was something that kind of flew back up in his face. I mean, I think of all the public figures that, you know, we've all been around for so many decades and such. And I think he is, I mean, he's one of the most consequential public figures that I think we have seen in Illinois for a good half century. I mean, I think he, I mean, the corruption, I think, ultimately defines him. But I mean, the one thing that the stroke he took on the death penalty is is something that we live with to this day and could live with for quite a long time. So, I mean, I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. But again, the corruption part of this legacy of his is not only a taint for him, but it's also kind of what I believe helped kind of crater out the Republican Party in Illinois for decades. I mean, it just, when that corruption scandal hit with him and the effect it had, it wiped away this infrastructure that the Republicans had had for so long in Illinois. And so that's part of his legacy as well.
And 26 years of unbroken rule, at least in the governorship, a little more mixed in the General Assembly. But Rick Pearson, let's talk about his policy work. There was Illinois First, big infrastructure program. We're going to spend more time on the death penalty at the end of our program today. But talk about, and you mentioned abortion as well, which is something else that he had an evolution on. Talk about where he, how he was as a politician in terms of policy.
He was, and if you talk to legislators or former legislators from his time, every one of them loved George Ryan. Part of it was that wheeling dealing atmosphere that he was. He was He was a creature of the General Assembly. As even though he was governor, he was still a creature of the General Assembly, and he loved the give and take, the machinations it took, and he wanted to do things. And you know, in that clip where compromise is, you know, not a dirty word, where these days where politics, you don't have that game of half a loaf is better than none at all. It's all or nothing politics. It's a reminder of when you had a group together of Republicans and Democrats and everybody kind of, you know, wanting to get things done. He had a terrific relationship with Mike Madigan, and part of that was the brotherhood of them both being speakers and trying to, knowing the ins and outs and the difficulties of trying to control a caucus. And so he had great success with Illinois First, a huge infrastructure program, the largest infrastructure program in decades in the state. And it was sorely needed because a lot of things had been let go. And he saw that opportunity to try to move the state forward.
Bernie, talk about his legacy in terms of, I don't know if you encountered that same thing that I did, where people would speak fondly about him, even as he was, you know, going through the criminal trial and in prison. And perhaps that's just because his successors had so much trouble figuring out the job and mastering it the way he did. Can you speak to that?
Well, I know that, you know, people who worked for him like him, I've got to say, other things have stuck with me and I think stick with people too. One of the opportunities I had in 2009 was to interview Scott Willis, who was the father who was driving the van in Wisconsin that, you know, led, there was a trucker, their truck part fell off the truck. Six of their children were killed. And, you know, he was, not particularly forgiving of George. I have these really good feelings, and people who know George, you know, enjoyed him, loved him, as Rick Pearson just said. People who worked with him knew he was someone who was actually warm under the gruff exposure, but what happened in the state with all of the bribery and the response to it was so terrible, and like, there were 70 people indicted in Operation Safe Road. It gives a mixed emotion. So, and yet, I know he was clearly a good family man. He loved his kids. Laura Lynn Ryan was, I think, a tremendous first lady who used to, you know, question me, "Are you going to be nice to George today?" He was two things at once. He was a very good person who did some bad things.
People are complicated indeed. I'm glad you brought up the Willis family. This is, again, as you said, six children died in this crash that were linked to this unqualified driver who had obtained a commercial license through corruption in the Secretary of State's office. I want to play a clip of the governor. This is from an interview he gave to CBS News after he was released from prison.
I'm not sure that there's anything I'd really wanted to have changed. But I don't know of any real major changes that I'd done in anything I did in the nearly 40 years I was in public office.
So you've not really come to grips with the fact that you were found guilty?
Yeah, sure. I've come to grips with the fact that I was convicted and sent there, but that doesn't mean it was right.
Why? Why was it not right?
Well, I just think there were a lot of things that went on that, you know, I've paid I paid the price. I did it, kept my mouth shut, and it's over. I'm looking to the future now.
Dave McKinney, did you ever get the sense that he had sort of reckoned with everything that had gone on with the corruption charges in his time in prison?
Well, not at all. I don't think I think that's kind of one of the real character flaws in George Ryan, where, you know, part of, you know, when you put your hand in the Bible and you take the oath of office and you swear to uphold the Constitution and everything, that includes a basic respect for the criminal justice system. And of course, Ryan focused so much of his own legacy on the criminal justice system when, you know, with his move on the death penalty. But to not respect what a jury found him guilty of and the work that they were involved in that case, I mean, that was a problem, because at the very core of this was You know, as Bernie mentioned, this 1994 fatal crash that was so devastating to a family in the Chicago area. And the fact that the trucker in that case whose rig this piece fell off of, he had paid a bribe to get his license. And it was part of this big fundraising scheme that Ryan and his people oversaw in the Secretary of State's office. I mean, state employees in that office were under such extreme pressure to buy fundraising tickets. I mean, their careers really depended on it. They would rise and fall based on, you know, how many of these tickets they would account for and purchase and sell. And the fact that here you have an instance where, you know, that infrastructure he built to stay in office led to the deaths of six people. And for there to be no contrition for that is something that I think certainly that family, I don't think they will ever forgive him for that.
Rick Pearson, we have continued to have governors who have gotten in trouble with the law, and certainly politicians at other levels, aldermen, state representatives, state senators, Speaker of the Illinois House. Do you think, and we only have about a minute left in our time together, did people learn any lessons from George Ryan, or how do you think that people reconciled with that who were not him?
Well, as Dave mentioned, when the Ryan whole corruption thing was just devastating for the Republican Party, but it was also devastating for the state of Illinois. It was just a big shock to this institutional system. And so you look at that, and then you follow up with Rod Blagojevich, who ran on how he was going to clean up corruption and all of that kind of thing. And the story I like to tell is Joel Quenneville used to coach the Blackhawks. First time I met him, told him I was a reporter. He said, "Oh, you're covering that Blagojevich feller. How many years is he going to get?" And I said, "George got 6.5. I bet Blagojevich gets double." He says, "You know, I never met a man who made book on prison sentences before." Well, it was 14 years was the sentence for Blagojevich. Yeah. Did anybody learn anything? I don't think anybody ever learns anything. We keep going through this cycle of corruption. It's part of our culture.
All right. I want to thank Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, Dave McKinney of WBEZ, and Bernie Schoenberg, formerly of the State Journal Register. Thank you for sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we'll talk with people who worked directly with the governor. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. All through the hour today, we are talking about the life and legacy of former Illinois Governor George Ryan, who died Friday at the age of 91. If you want to join us today, the number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. We did hear from people in our text messaging group about this. Gene in Bloomington said, "I never quite understood why Ryan went to jail. I do know he supported LGBT rights and ended the death penalty. For both those things, I'm truly grateful." We also heard from Terry in Batavia, who said, "I was very glad he commuted death sentences. It would be good if our country as a whole did the same. That one piece of good outshines his failings." And we also heard from Don Girard, former mayor of Champaign, who said, "I once spoke at an event for which he was the keynote, and we dined together. He regretted the pension ramp, and he wasn't a fan of Rauner or Trump. He was kind and encouraging. Ryan was one of the last true public servants in the GOP. Godspeed." Again, if you want to join us today, it's 800-222-9455. Later in the program, we'll be talking more about Ryan's work with the death penalty. But now I want to turn to two people who knew him personally. Jim Durkin was a state representative when Ryan was Secretary of State and later governor. He went on himself to become the House Minority Leader. Jim Durkin, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here.
Also, Julie Dutton, who was press secretary to Lieutenant Governor George Ryan in the 1980s. She went on to be communications director when Ryan was governor at the Bureau of the Budget, which is now the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Julie, welcome to you as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
So, Jim Durkin, I'm going to start with you. You were in the legislature when Ryan was Secretary of State and the governor. I don't know if you were listening earlier. Some of the reporters called him a creature of the General Assembly. What was he like to work with?
Well, I think creature's a little heavy to me. But,
You know, but he's a person that graduated through the ranks of the legislature and moved on to constitutional offices. But, you know, you have different personalities. I came into the legislature with Jim Edgar. Jim Edgar was in his second term, I believe. He was finishing out his second term. And, you know, there was obviously a very sharp contrast between Jim Edgar and George Ryan. Jim Edgar is was extremely proper, but he was very buttoned up. He was a great governor. I have great respect for Jim Edgar, but Jim Edgar was a person that I think had a definitely different personalities. You know, you would you didn't get a chance to speak to Jim Edgar a lot. He was focused strictly on budget, and his people had him kind of isolated. George, on the other hand, was just the opposite. You can find George anywhere, anytime. And he'd give you, you know, a few minutes of time. And if you needed to talk about something that's non-government related, he'd love to do it. But if you had to get into something that dealt with state government, he was open, and he always shared time with us. And so I enjoyed my time with Jim Edgar, and I certainly enjoyed my time with George Ryan. And a lot of us always joke about the time coming in when Jim Edgar had new members of the General Assembly over to the mansion for dinner just to meet him and his wife and some of his top people. And a lot of us were, you know, were new, but we also enjoyed a cocktail once in a while. But at the dinners, there was never any alcohol. So it was nice flavored water. But when George was governor, it was just the opposite. He had a nice big dinner. He'd have people over, and it was, you know, the clearly, you can get access to a drink if you wanted to. So those are two different personalities, but I will just get on to George. I got along with him. I come from a large Irish Catholic family. I have seven brothers, and, you know, nothing's real formal. You just do what you got to do. And it was kind of, talking to George was just like talking to, you know, somebody from my family, and he would never took himself too serious. But George was a person that wanted to get things done. He wanted to get things done. He was more interested in moving Illinois forward and trying to accomplish some goals than to settle political scores.
Julie Dutton, you had the opportunity of working with Ryan when he was lieutenant governor. And for people who may not be familiar, in Illinois, that is not a particularly powerful job. It's a pretty small office. So you got to work pretty closely with him. What was he like? How would you describe him as a sort of a work colleague behind the scenes?
Oh, I found Governor Ryan just to be wonderfully charming, kind of playful. I was always struck by his humility, his social inclinations, and perhaps overarching over all of that was just the level of concern and dedication to helpfulness that he had toward people. And you are right. It was a small office. Gosh, I can't imagine we had more than a couple dozen staffers at most in the lieutenant governor's office. But on the plus side of that, it certainly gave me, and I believe all the other staffers, an opportunity to have a lot of one-on-one time with him. One aspect, for example, that I remember would almost be a right that you could count on would be after a day's travel, often would have to take the state plane because it's such a large state. But after a day's event, we would be touching down into Springfield. You know, those planes are kind of small and they start feeling a little rickety and so forth. But almost always on touchdown, George would shout out, he goes, "Well, we cheated death once again." And then he would immediately ask for the phone so he could check in with his wife and partner, Lura Lynn, to give her assurances that he was back in town and would be home soon. And not long after I started working there, let's see, I would have been, I think it was like 25, and that most of the staffers were young like that in their early 20s and the like. But the very first time I got to meet Lura Lynn, I was in my office. She came to the office. She's in the waiting area. George calls me out, and I see Lura Lynn. Now, she was a spectacularly beautiful woman. I mean, just youthful looking and luminescent, beautiful. And George steps forward with her and he has this playful look on his face. He said, now, Julie, have you ever met my mother? I don't know if you've met my mom before. And Laura Lynn in this like mock exasperation is like, oh, George. George steps away. Laura Lynn and I have a few comments with each other, share a little chit chat. As she's leaving, she turns back and kind of whispers to me, now don't let him scare you. He's really just a big teddy bear. So it just really kind of set a warm, engaging feeling for the my tenure there with him. But I look back on those days with a great deal of gratitude and fondness, and certainly saw many other personal traits of his on display.
Jim Durkin, I've thought about politicians of George Ryan's era. This has also been said of Jim Edgar. I think Jim Edgar has said it of himself, that they may not survive in today's political environment, given who they were and how they were oriented, at least at the time. Can you talk about that aspect of Ryan's approach?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
George and it was particularly George and Jim Edgar too, but they were, I refer to them as old school politicians, but that is not meant as an insult. This was old school politicians were the guys that would say, let's get things done. We can settle our differences at the campaigns and the streets. But the fact is, when we're under the roof of the Capitol, let's sit down and let's try to knock some things out. And that's what George did. And I've said this the other day, George had this, you know, unique ability to be able to get Republicans and Democrats to sit down, leaders, and say, we're going to get this done. And we're not going to leave this room until we figure out, we reach an accommodation, a deal, whether it's on the budget or a big policy issue or you know, a capital program. And I've seen it firsthand with George. And he did it with the legislature, but he also did it, and I've said this with labor and management. And that is a unique trait that is lacking in government now, particularly in Washington and in a lot of the states. Politics is more about power and it's a blood sport, as opposed to really focusing on what you were hired for by the voters of your state or in your congressional district. So George and Jim Edgar, I think, would not survive in this very bitter partisan world that we're living in.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. All day today, we are talking about the life and legacy of former Illinois Governor George Ryan, who died Friday at the age of 91. In this part of the show, we're talking about people who knew him as sort of a work colleague. Jim Durkin was a member of the Illinois House of Representatives at the time. He would go on to become House Minority Leader. Also, Julie Dutton, who was press secretary to then Lieutenant Governor George Ryan in the 1980s and went on to work with him in the Secretary of State's office and ultimately in the Bureau of the Budget under Governor Ryan. Julie, I want to ask you, and I want you to say as much or as little about this as you're comfortable with, but you had a difficult experience working with Governor Ryan and didn't tell him about it for many years. Again, say as much or as little about that as you want, but I do want to ask how he responded when you did tell him about it and what that revealed to you about him as a person.
Yes, thank you for giving me an opportunity to share this with your listeners. And you're right, it was very disturbing, a very troubling incident. I started working for him late summer of 83. It was I loved my job. It was a very steep learning curve for me. I worked a lot of weekends, as a lot of staff did and so forth. But one particular state holiday in February of 84, I went into work. Since it was a state holiday, there was no one else in the office, or so I thought. And do let me emphasize, this particular office was not on the State House campus. It was north of there. It was an office dedicated to environmental cleanup efforts for landmines, or I'm sorry, coal mines down in southern Illinois. These were areas that represented environmental hazards in terms of water runoff. It was safety concerns because you could break through the crust of these abandoned mine areas and the fire would be exposed. Eyesores. the federal government started pouring millions and millions of dollars into cleaning up these areas. So anyway, this particular day, I went into the office that was set aside for the what was called abandoned mined land reclamation area, preparing some press materials for a public event we were scheduled to do later that week. Thinking I was by myself, had a very, very troubling situation that arose in that one of my colleagues who was with the technical staff attacked me, and he sexually abused me. Given the fact that this was the early 80s, I was not the person at that point who could step forward with this having occurred, this very violent act that was brought against me, very, very personal level of violence. I did not even go to my immediate supervisor about it. However, as the whole juggernaut kind of came across the land with the Me Too and then the Time's Up, which was the legal arm of it. And that, when was it, like the 2017, 2018, somewhere in there, I did reach out and was given pro bono representation by the Time's Up people. This in some ways empowered me because I was at that time sort of reconnecting with George at a social level. And because I was feeling a lot more supported by the having the legal resources being provided to me, I asked George if I could talk to him one-on-one about it. Of course, he was deeply, deeply distressed, gave me every assurance he would have fired the guy immediately. What was particularly touching about his response, though, was that I'll bet, gosh, for 18 months, 24 months afterward, he would call me regularly. How are you doing? Are you getting counseling? Hey, you had mentioned that your attacker had operated, volunteered at the local level for this youth outdoor organization. I know the guy who runs it. I can't remember if it's at the national level or at the state level. I'm happy to reach out to him to explore if there are some channels that might make sense for pursuing this and so forth. Ultimately, for a variety of reasons, I did not and have not pursued legal action. But in many, many ways, George Ryan stood up for me and offered me a level of comfort and support that, quite frankly, my friends and family were not really able to do so. And again, I understand it's a very complicated, tragic situation when someone imposes that type of violence on you. But it absolutely made it just really, really touched my heart that he would be so concerned about my well-being. And I personally do not think, or at least I don't anticipate ever having full, quote, closure on this. But his actions and his concern, his support, the fact that he would reach out to me so consistently, it really nudged me a little closer to a feeling of healing and being acknowledged and not having to kind of stay in that whole shadow of shame that I had been in for some 4 decades or whatever. So it absolutely confirmed to me that George Ryan is the person that I thought he was.
Well, one, I'm so sorry you went through that, and thank you so much for sharing that story with us.
You're welcome.
We are going to take a break. I want to come back and wrap up with Jim Durkin and Julie Dutton after this. You're listening to The 21st Show. We'll be back in a minute. If you want to join our conversation today about the late Illinois Governor George Ryan, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the life of former Illinois Governor George Ryan, who died Friday at the age of 91. We began with reporters today, then we are talking with people who worked with him. Jim Durkin was state representative when Governor Ryan was in the governor's office, also when he was Secretary of State for 4 years. And Julie Dutton was a press secretary for then Lieutenant Governor George Ryan in the 1980s and would go on to work in communications roles as he continued to advance through Illinois government. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. Jim Durkin, I have to ask, one of the guests in the first part of our program today said he thought that the sort of downfall, if you will, of Governor Ryan, the corruption conviction, really sent Republicans into the political wilderness in Illinois. It was sort of the catalyzing event. I wonder how you, as somebody who was tasked with leading Republicans in Illinois for a time, how you think of his legacy in that regard.
Well, you know what? People are going to dwell on the conviction of George. And, you know, that was a rough time for Illinois. It was a tough time for George. It was a tough time for Republicans. George had, you know, he was old school. He was, he made sure that the political organizations through the state were operating and that they were ready to roll when it was campaign time, really organized in that way. When George left office, that kind of fell away. And part of it was due to just old patronage in which there were employees with different state agencies who were county chairmen. But that's the way things were run. But we actually had good operations at that time. So that fell apart after George, after he left the position of governor and, you know, and went away and did his time. But, you know, I'll just say this about George, a couple of things. And I give him a lot of credit. You know, he made a mistake. And, you know, we're all of us as human beings are we're fallible. We make mistakes. We make errors. There's not a person out there. George did. He paid a heavy price and his family did for it. But he walked out and he left his after he left prison. He did it with, you know, kept his chin up and went about his life. You know, we have a former governor right now who's out complaining about being railroaded and he wasn't given a fair trial. George accepted the consequences like a man and moved on. And I give him a lot of credit for that. But one thing that I think that was, I was really tied in with George back when he was governor was the whole issue of the death penalty. I came into the legislature as a prosecutor from Chicago with the Cook County State Attorney's Office, where most of the capital cases came from, violent cases out of Chicago. And I had a different attitude towards the criminal justice system. Very tough. I felt very tough on crime, and I was pro-death penalty. I had, in my term, when Georgia was governor, was given an assignment from Mike Madigan. And this was, I'm not sure why he gave it to me. I think I know why. But was to look into the wrongful convictions and what he referred to, meaning Mike Madigan, prosecutorial misconduct. So I spent about a year and a half looking into the cases that had been reversed, that were reversed by the Illinois Supreme Court, and found common themes in all of the cases where there were problems: unreliable jailhouse informants, unreliable eyewitness testimony, and some issuances where discovery was not complete for purposes of defense putting on their case. And I put forward legislation that would address each and every one of those. And I know at that time, George was really considering and looking into what was going on with the death penalty system. So I'm a person that I believe in. I'm tough on crime, but I'm just as tough on the facts and getting to the truth. So when George was given this difficult situation of signing a death warrant on a person named Andrew Corcorellis, who was convicted with a group of individuals who were serial killers and more of a cult. Everybody was under the impression, yeah, this is easy. George is going to do this and we need to send this guy to the gallows. But it was not an easy thing for George. And it really showed who he was, that he was a different person. He wasn't this gruff person like let's execute and like we saw with Gacy. And it took some time for George. He eventually signed the death warrant, but I talked to him afterwards about it. And I said, what was the problem? He said, well, a lot of people were pushing me to do it, but you don't understand. I'm the last person out there who's standing between life and death with a human being. And I don't think that's right. And George was concerned about some of the flaws with the capital punishment system. I felt that there were things that had been changed, but I think him having to make that decision about life and death with this inmate who was sentenced to death really had a, it really troubled him greatly about what is the, why should the state be involved in executions? And it became a very big political issue. And some people said it was more politically driven for George, but I don't believe that's true. I think that he was deeply troubled having to be placed in that situation. And I think at the end of the day, I still believe in consequences. People make this, you know, they make decisions and they have to do their time. They have to live with what they've done. But I think George made the right decision on balance, but it was a difficult thing. And we don't need to be in the position of being executioners in this state. And it's tough for me to say that coming out of a Cook County State's Attorney's office, but I also believe it. And, you know, let's think of ways in which we can make society safer and better. And that's where George's head was on that. And I give him credit. At the time, I disagreed with him. But, you know, with time, a lot of us, you know, we get a little bit, we change our positions in time over years. And I've looked back at that many times. And I remember talking to George specifically about this case, which he had that difficult decision to make about signing off on the execution of this inmate. And he basically said, it's easy for you guys to say what you want, but stand in my shoes and make that decision. It's not that easy.
Jim Durkin was a Republican leader of the Illinois House of Representatives. He was a state legislator when George Ryan was governor. Jim, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Ryan, thank you very much.
Julie Dutton, I just want to come back to you briefly, and I do, we'll move on to Maurice Posley in a moment to talk about the governor's more on the death penalty. But ultimately, I should say, and we heard from a lot of people on this, Aaron in Springfield said, you know, ending the death penalty absolves him for just about anything of Governor Ryan. How do you want people to remember George Ryan?
I would wish for most people to, at some point in their life, have somebody like who George Ryan was in my life. He helped me understand and assign more of a priority status to family, to friends, to decency, to humanity, to humility. It was just a tremendous privilege to have served Mr. Ryan, and he gave me tools and insights that I have drawn across for the rest of my life. And somebody was commenting, a friend was commenting to me when they heard that I was going to be doing this, having an opportunity to be on your show. And they said, well, isn't there kind of a richness of sorts that for over the years that you would help George prepare for his interviews, and now finally you're having an opportunity to have an interview in which you are laying out what he meant for you personally. And so this is, as I say, it was just a wonderful privilege to have worked with him, to have grown under him. And I certainly do thank you, Brian, for giving me an opportunity to share some thoughts with your listeners.
Julie Dutton, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. I very much appreciate it.
You're welcome.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Again, we are talking about the life and legacy of former Illinois Governor George Ryan, who died Friday. And again, as we've talked about throughout the program, every obituary mentions two things: his corruption conviction and his work and eventual stance as an opponent of the death penalty in Illinois. And somebody who knows more about that than most is Maurice Posley. He was a investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune for many years, still is, but not at the Tribune. While he was there, he shared a Pulitzer Prize for one investigation, was a finalist for another. And more to the point for our conversation, he co-wrote with Ryan the book Until I Could Be Sure, How I Stopped the Death Penalty in Illinois. Maurice Posley, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Brian. Glad to be here.
The vagaries of time are such that we don't have a great deal of time left in the program today, but I do want to ask you what more you can tell us about Ryan's journey to becoming an opponent of the death penalty, and maybe just sort of setting out how broken the system was in Illinois.
Well, it was broken enough that by the time he declared the moratorium, I think 12 people had been executed and 13 people had been exonerated, or it was around 50-50. I mean, at one point he said it's no better than flipping a coin. And he had, I mean, to answer your question in one way, I think he was astonished at the reaction. I don't even have to think it. I know he was astonished at the reaction when he did declare the moratorium. I don't think he grasped at that time the global sort of significance of it. I think it came to him eventually, but because it was such a, in a way, personal thing, I think Jim Durkin nailed it, to tell you the truth. And, you know, my relationship with him up until the time when he reached out and asked if I would be willing to tell his story was always just as a journalist. And I was there at Northwestern when he emptied death row. He cited the Tribune's reporting by Steve Mills and Ken Armstrong on the problems with the Illinois death penalty system that had been detailed in their series. I think he genuinely came to it, and Jim really caught. I talked to him a lot about the night that he had to, that Cocorales was executed. And for him, it was a human thing. Why should I be the person to have to be the final voice to approve killing someone, whether they deserved it, quote unquote, or not? The question was, should the state be in the business of killing people to stop people, to deter people from killing people? And I believed, I thought that all the criticism that even back then, and over the years, that he did this for political reasons was just, you know, it just wasn't so. And I spent a lot of hours with him and came to the conclusion that, boy, his heart was right exactly there, and his mind.
Yeah, there were people who said maybe he was trying to distract from the mounting corruption allegations and convictions of people under him. But I guess in the short amount of time we have remaining, can you put his action in the sort of broader, as you mentioned, the global context? I mean, is it, you know, it's cliche to say it now, but the sort of Nixon goes to China moment, that it's a conservative Republican doing this?
Well, not only was it a conservative Republican who did it, but he was the first one to do it. He was the first governor to declare a moratorium like that. His emptying of death row was the most expansive and significant emptying of death row in its time. But he really helped contribute in a large way to changing the debate to is it right to kill people, or can we trust the system to kill the right people? And by putting the sort of focus on the system that it was not reliable, I mean, look, when I left the Tribune in 2008, if you'd asked me, will Illinois ever abolish the death penalty, I would have said, I doubt it. But it's gone. And many other states, a dozen or so, have done it since. And I think that that's because of what George did. And it gave people sort of the ability to have to take these stands and realize that it's not going to be the end of the world for you. Like I said, you know, I've talked to him a lot about the moment when he decided to do the moratorium, and the call came saying, it's time to set another date. And he said, I think you better take a step back on that. I'm not ready to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talked a lot about seeing Anthony Porter being exonerated. And you've got journalism students involved in helping to prove, get someone off death row. To him, the system just, and then when the legislature really did not act on the proposals that were by his commission, he felt he had no choice.
I will no longer tinker with the machinery of death, he said at Northwestern. You can read about that and more in the book that Governor Ryan told the story he told with the writing of Maurice Posley. It's called Until I Could Be Sure, How I Stopped the Death Penalty in Illinois. Maurice Posley, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
My pleasure.
That is it for us today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.